You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
I'm delighted to welcome my next guest, Tania Unkevich. She is a MP in the New Zealand Parliament. So as I've got out, they've brought better talent in. And so Tania is my guest today. Amongst many claims to fame, she is a New Zealand First MP, List MP based in Auckland. She's already hit the ground running, incredibly busy. And again, it's my delight, Tania, to have you on the show. Welcome.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, Simon. Thank you.
Hey, with all new MPs, well, to many listeners and across New Zealand, people are new. I was there many years ago, now yourself. So we'd just love over the next few minutes to hear a little bit about you, what's drawn you into Parliament, what you're hoping to achieve. So without sounding too chronological, where did Tania Unkevich start from? What was your career before coming into Parliament?
Well, look, actually, I did so many things, to be honest. My background is commerce, and I specialised in accounting software. When MYOB first came into the country, I started selling, installing, and did it with hundreds of businesses. And that was a really good small business that I had going. And then in my mid-30s, because I was a bit of a personal development junkie, had my own stuff to sort out, I then studied to be a therapist. Had a lot of grief to deal with. And so that was in my mid-30s. And little did I know that that was actually preparation for what was to come. And that was when my then husband, Phil, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And he passed away 5 months later when I was 40. So that was where my career began in speaking and writing. I wrote a couple of books when Phil passed away. And I've since written two more books on overcoming adversity and addictions and things like that. So I really am a Tania of all trades. You know, there's a commerce side of me, and then there's this counseling slash life coaching side of me. I was a coach for Tony Robbins. So I did a lot of international coaching, business coaching and mentoring. Writing, speaking, been on radio. So it's been a real mix. And I've just had a desire to help mankind. And, you know, then I just got to the stage in my life was, how can I do it on a grander scale? And the doors opened for me. And here I am sitting in Parliament. It's very much like that, to be honest. A decision was made and everything just opened up for me.
It's fantastic. Well, I feel inadequate already, including that you've done radio. We should probably be switching roles. Look, it says me, what a wonderful array of experiences. And obviously, sorry for the loss of your husband all those years ago. But at the same time, what an enormous amount of experience that you bring to our Parliament. If I might make a comment, we need it. I actually think we need a breadth of experience. It's really refreshing. What was it like working or getting to know someone like Tony Robbins? What was he like?
Tony is a huge man with big teeth and a big personality. Honestly, it was hard work, but it taught me discipline. I really feel that the training I had as a Tony Robbins coach was definitely the toughest thing I've ever done, even harder than campaigning, believe it or not. And it the way they teach us how to coach, I think, is second to none. So you also coach so many people. You get really good at listening and identifying problems and helping people move forward in life. So I've got to say, those skills are some of the greatest skills that I bring into Parliament.
Oh, again, says me, I think they're vitally important. I used to use the word pastoral. Yeah. Quite a lot. A lot of the time of an MP, as you'll now know, is sitting, listening to people, which is possibly a surprise to listeners. MPs listen to people.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's so true, though.
Yeah. How have you found the adjustment, actually, into parliamentary life? Was it what you were expecting? Is it busier, different?
You know what? I didn't have any expectations, but I think because what I have done leading up to it and how hard I've worked in certain areas of my life and what I've had to achieve in short periods of time at times, you know, like writing books and things like that, I feel that I have slotted into Parliament quite nicely. I'm really disciplined and I feel you need discipline. I'm an early bird though. So the late nights, I must admit, has been an adjustment for me. And then, you know, I don't sleep in. If you go to bed at midnight, I don't sleep in. I'm still awake at 4 or 5. So by the time I get home, husband says to me, yeah, you look really bad. for a few days.
Ex-husband, no, only kidding, no, with those sort of comments.
Oh, no, he's hanging in there. He's hanging in there.
Well, actually, talk people through that, if you don't mind, a little. I mean, I can sure. completely relate to it. Like you, I'm a morning person. But let people understand just the hours that you do, including you just had urgency last week. So yes. explain people through that.
That was brutal, I have to say. Well, look, I fly down. I choose to just stay in a hotel. So I fly down on a Monday evening. I'm usually in the office by about 7 a.m. in the morning. And on a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night, we are in the house until 10 p.m. at night. And then the following day on a Thursday, we're there till 6. And then I get on a plane at 7:30 and I'm home late that night. Now, I've accepted that from the time I land on a Monday till the time I get home, I will have very little sleep and I will work nonstop. Now, I've accepted that, so it's okay for me, you know? And believe it or not, some days I don't have time to eat lunch. And you'll know what that's like. You just go from meeting to meeting and then you go into the house and, Tanya, you're speaking on this bill. And it's like, what's this bill about? You know, you've got an hour to prepare for it and really learn about it. So the adrenaline, you know, I find you've really got to manage your health and your self-care because your adrenaline goes up and down. And yeah, it's just accept whatever happens in those days. And it's tough. It's a hard 3 days, but I kind of enjoy it, you know? I come home and I say to my husband, oh, I'm exhausted. And then after a day, I go, I'm ready to go back into the mush pit. You know, you really enjoy it. So
it's almost, I found, a bit of an addiction because everything you're saying, and again, to listeners, it completely echo what Tanya's saying. There's no exaggeration. It's long hours. My funny thing was, like, you barely got to eat. And yet, for my case, I kept putting weight on. Very confusing. But it's busy, and I assume you're back on a Thursday night. So the time you've flown back, got back into home, you're probably 9, even 10 at night sometimes. But you'll be straight back up again on Friday morning and across the weekend because there's always local events to attend as well.
It's a 24/7 job, and you don't really slow down. Your mind doesn't slow down. You're always thinking about it. I start listening to the news at 5 a.m. every morning, and I'm listening to the news all day. I keep on top of everything that way, and it just doesn't stop. But then I also say to myself, you know, Tanya, you can just watch rubbish for 2 hours. And I do that, and that relaxes me. I watched a couple of really lame girly movies last week, and I noticed how it really relaxed me at the end of the night. So you do have to give yourself that bit of space and take that time out. Take care of your health for sure.
Oh, vitally important. And recently too, you've had urgency, so not finishing on a Thursday. You carried on right into the weekend.
Yes. So Thursday night, did we go to midnight? No, we didn't go to midnight on Thursday night. I believe we went till 10 p.m. on Thursday night. Then Friday night, we went to midnight. And then Saturday night, we went to midnight as well. This was all budget, post-budget debate, etc. So yes, we finished Saturday night at midnight and I was on a 6 a.m. flight. So I managed to get 3 hours sleep and got on that 6 a.m. flight, came home, and it really felt like I'd flown to London and back by the time I got back in the weekend.
I think it's a really good explanation for people to understand. If you ever see an MP looking tired, I don't know about you, Tanya, but I've had people who would text or message or come through Instagram or something and that have seen me on television and they go, you look terrible. It's like, oh, thanks. But it's like when you've worked those sort of hours week after week, it does exhaust you. It does exhaust you.
My husband said to me when I got back at Christmas, because we did a lot leading up to Christmas and urgency, he said, you look the second worst I've ever seen you. And I said, okay, so what was the worst? He said, well, when you came back from your Tony Robbins training, nothing beats that. But yeah, you look pretty bad, dear. You need to rest. So
I'm admiring your husband's ability just to speak so freely and not to be... It's suffered some serious consequences.
No, yeah. Oh, I like the honesty, so it's good.
I'll jump in a moment, if you don't mind. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what drew you into Parliament. You talked a bit about service, but I was just curious again, when you speak of the work you've done around Tony Robbins and counselling and helping people, writing books and so forth, I mean, it's probably a big question, Tanya, but you know, what are some of the observations you've got about the human condition? What have you learnt about human beings? I know it's exceptionally broad. Are we strong? Are we resilient? Are we people who need greater support and love? I mean, what are some of the things that you've picked up on through all your experiences?
We all have needs, and it varies. And some of the greatest human needs that we have are love and connection. We all have a desire to be part of a community. Some of us have a desire for variety. Some of us have a desire to be in control. It's not so good. Some of us have a desire for significance. And these are the things that drive us and drive our behaviors. So if you can identify what is driving your behavior, then that makes it easier for you to make a change to your behavior. So, for example, I've worked a lot with people with eating disorders and eating issues. And I would always ask them, what is it that you are needing? What is it that the food brings you? And for many, it's love and connection. They have connection with food because they are so lonely, you know. So it's that's some of the greatest things that I've learned. And to know what your own needs are is a huge thing, because you can then understand why you do the things you do.
Well, there's a good challenge for me there, actually. I'm a philosopher by training and lots of pastoral work with my former life, but I've probably spent so much time helping other people, I've never put that question to myself.
For yourself, yeah. It's so valuable to know that about yourself, you know, and we all have a need for significance, which is okay, but when that is one of your top needs, that's not okay.
Yeah. It reminds me, actually, when I used to be a prison chaplain, and the old Mount Eden, and when you talk about what drives people, that used to be sort of an underlying discussion with the boys, particularly in the youth yard, is that, how have you got here? And there was always lots of reasons, often terrible experiences in their lives, but there was an element of them trying to find a relevance, a community, a sense of purpose, sadly through crime. Sorry to put a negative one in there.
Oh, no,
It just resonated.
Well, you know, that gives them attention, and bad attention is better than no attention. And that's what drives people to do some of the things that they do.
Well, I'm going off on a real tangent here, but that just sparked another memory of, a young woman used to deal quite a lot with young pregnant women as well, and she'd had so many children. I think she might have been up to number 6 by this time. And the stereotype, different fathers and stuff. But I was just having a chat to her, and I remember just asking to say, you know, what's going on in life, and what's, you know, again, your motivations. And I'll never forget, Tanya, what she said to me. She said, "Nobody likes me. No one ever talks to me. But when I have a little bubba, when I have a little baby, people on the street come up to me." And I went, wow, you know, it was just a truth moment. Yeah. A truth moment for me. And it's always stayed with me. That was something that was driving her behaviors there, to get that response from the community, to feel part
of something. Yeah, it was her identity. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Anyway, before we go off on a whole tangent on pastoral sides, so obviously a massive background. Our writer as well. We're going to have to, I'll make sure after this, we'll have to find out how to put some stuff into social media, let people know where we can find your books. But what then drew you to Parliament? You hinted at the start. I mean, did one day you wake up and go, Parliament, here I come? What was the catalyst? What was that liminal moment?
Well, I was thinking about, you know, the books help mankind on a greater scale. But then I started thinking, it was around the 2017 mark, thinking maybe my brother was saying it too. He says, "Tan, politics might be a good avenue for you if you want to keep serving." And I was thinking of that. Then my parents both started getting unwell. So that didn't really work. But I did start following politics more. And it was around 2020, 2021 that I found myself to be a political orphan. because I didn't like what was happening in New Zealand. And something then sparked inside me. It was actually May 2021 that I made the decision to do it. I said to my husband, what do you think? He said, go for it. I said to my brother, what do you think? He said, it's time. 2 months after that, in July 2021, I discovered that New Zealand First were coming back, that Winston Peters was coming back. I thought he was retired for good.
Oh, never. Says me to you, you know I'm better. Never write Winston off.
No, Lazarus. That's another good name for him. And that happened on the July the 10th. It was the synchronicity that happened in order for me to find out that he was coming back. That night I read everything about New Zealand First's website and I looked at myself and said, gee, Tanya, you're an intelligent woman, yet you've gone and voted the same way for decades. You didn't really do your research. And I realized how aligned I was with their policies. Anyway, that was July the 10th, 2021. The following month, my father passed away. And then we all got locked down. And then everything happened. And then I thought, gosh, I don't think the political thing's going to happen. Then my mother passed away. Then things happened. Then I decided to write my third and fourth books. The fourth book was already in the making, but I ended up writing a third book in that time. And then something happened towards the end of 2022. I said to Grant, I either go to the New Zealand First conference or I don't. I went to their conference and within 12 hours, this is the party for me. I'm going to run in the next election.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's sad, although it's very much human condition that there are tragedies or sadnesses in lives. Obviously, the passing of parents, going through that a bit myself at the moment, elder parents and their issues, it's sad. But it's funny, it's also a time of a lot of change.
Unbelievable.
It is a catalyst.
Unbelievable. And, you know, because I took care of my parents so much in the last 5 years of their life, I couldn't be doing this now if I was still looking after them. And so the timing, everything, the synchronicity, and I made sure I told my mum and dad before I passed away. And I told my mum that I was thinking of running with Winston. And she goes, in her Croatian accent, oh, I like Winston. He's handsome. And so I kind of got her blessing, I suppose. I think she had a bit of a crush on him. And anyway, it just happened. And I just worked hard. And I focused on what it was that I wanted, and here I am.
And so, well, firstly, I think it's great. I'm a great believer in the multiplicity of parties. I've always been struck by the James K. Baxter poem where he talks about Labour mum and National dad. It's sort of that people just get into this funny rhythm, but actually there are other parties and other views. Mm. And could I say, you're probably one of the rare, there's a rarity in New Zealand is someone who's actually gone and read fully a party's policy and then made decisions.
Well, look, you know, it really shocked me because I actually asked myself the question, how come I haven't voted for New Zealand First before, you know? Always loved Winston, but I just mindlessly went along and did what I've done every other year. So it was a big wake-up call for me. And I thought, well, if I do it, there's a lot of other people out there who do the same thing.
Well, clearly enough, because you guys are back, you're back in Parliament.
I know. Isn't that great?
Well, I just think when I go around, the number of people who speak about New Zealand First is quite striking. I suppose I'm a known political, I'm known politically, so people are wanting to talk about it. But it's certainly got people chatting and actually engaging in policy. So maybe off that, because conscious of your time as well, I mean, what is it? You know, early on now, but what is it that you're hoping to achieve in Parliament? What are some of the aims that you can talk about?
Me personally, I really like being a voice for people who feel that they don't have a voice. And as you may have seen, I'm speaking up in certain areas to do with women's spaces, privacy, safety, children's privacy and safety. I'm speaking up on topics to do with the COVID inquiry. So I'm speaking up on topics that some find controversial, but I don't mind speaking up about it because someone has to do it. And I love speaking up for, I have a real heart for people who are at the end stage of their life. So I'm visiting a lot of hospices. I have a love for the elders. I mean, my parents were everything to me. They were probably the babies I never had. So as they got older, I really developed a huge respect for seniors, even more on what it must be like for them as they get towards the end stage of their life, you know. So I have a real love for that group in our community, and I will just be an advocate.
Which I think is wonderful. Look, I'll be honest, I think it's a rarity at times in Parliament. That's my own view, and I'm always, it's one of the reasons I've got you on, is detected very quickly early on, and from others who have spoken about you, you're passionate, you're driven, there's a focus, and that advocacy for people often in need, and might I say, for a lot of listeners, the COVID inquiry is a big, big deal, and I think they'll be thrilled to know that someone's there advocating. And as you say, for women, knowing what a woman is always a good start. Yes. Yeah, but advocating for women, for children, I just think it's great. If I can ask, are you coming across a bit of resistance in those spaces, including of how we care for the elderly, like palliative care and so forth?
I think the resistance might be just the deafening silence. You know what I mean? And there's definitely trolling happening online. That's really started. However, that means I'm doing good work. You know, if no one was throwing stones at me, then that means I'm not making enough noise. So I'm okay with that. But yes, I do find that there is a lot of silence. I wish that there would be a few more voices, but that's fine. I'm going to lead the way if I have to, Simon, you know?
I think there's a fearlessness already that I can sense in the work you do. And again, it's only my view, but we need more of that in Parliament. I love my time there, Tanya, but I was struck by how many didn't seem to come in with a strong view on anything, nor being prepared to speak up on issues. And personally, I didn't mind it was different views to mine. It was just like, speak up. Why are you here?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, look, I'm Croatian, remember? We're loud, we're passionate, we swing our arms around, we eat a lot. So,
all right. I think that's wonderful. Well, look, I think that's probably a good place to end this interview. I know that you have to carry on. You've used the word service many times. I think for listeners to understand that Tanya's already very busy in these early months of Parliament and service and other things to do. But Tanya, I'd love to have you back on at some point to hear a little bit more your work and advocacy around, obviously, the COVID review. Yes. Around women's spaces, safety of children and so forth. So look, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. And I'd love to come back. There's so much to talk about. As you know, I talk a lot, right? So there's plenty to share.
To be honest, it's a gift. It truly is a gift and something our Parliament needs. Because that's the other irony, isn't there? There are some MPs that you basically never say boo. It's like, well, again, what are you doing here?
And then here comes the Croat.
Tanya, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.